Hello and welcome to the journalism.co.uk podcast, a show where we bring you insights from media industry experts to help journalists do their jobs better. I'm your host, Jacob Granger. This week, we'll reflect on the lessons learned from an independent local news organisation that was forced to close down recently. The Lincolnite was one of the more innovative UK independent news organisations since launching in 2010, most recently creating a community-centric app in a bid to monetise local journalism. But last month, it went bust. Managing editor Daniel Ionescu joins us today to unpick some of the big topics like the sustainability of independent local news when platforms, governments, and no, not even audiences are willing to support true innovation on a scale that would help it survive. UK independent news needs a sugar daddy to keep it going. That's his words, not mine. But those capable of doing so do not want hard-hitting journalism to survive. So where on earth do we go from here? Stay tuned to find out. Daniel, welcome to the journalism.co.uk podcast. A pleasure to have you on the show. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
We're going to talk a lot today about the Lincolnite, which we're all sad to hear closed down last month. And hopefully in this conversation, we'll reflect on, you know, some of the highs, some of the lows, and maybe, you know, some of the lessons learned over that period of time that you were operating in for the last 14 years. But let's start with the origin story of the Lincolnite, because I love it. Take it away.
The origin story starts in circa 2007. I'm originally from Romania, born in Bucharest, the capital city there, and I pretty much landed at the University of Lincoln, where I studied journalism for 3 years. I graduated in 2010. But during uni, I had the amazing chance to take on the student newspaper, The Link, which was a fresh endeavor for a pretty fresh university at the time, but it was only a print product. So when I had the chance to take it on, one of the things that I did was to transform it from a quarterly print product into a much more regularly updated website and with a print counterpart. And one of the amazing things that we had the chance of doing at uni back in the day were full-on news days. So you basically had 8 hours in a newsroom where you were acting as a full-on publication, and you had to produce bulletins on the hour 4 times a day, as well as go out and news gather. And we did that for a couple of years, which meant that we were able to build quite a few contacts and make ourselves known locally. There was only really one local news publication, the local newspaper, owned by one of the main corporates, still going, but it was a daily at the time. So our concept and idea was pretty simple: today's news today. So that meant that if there was a traffic incident or a policing incident or an earthquake like we had back then, we were able to report on it as it happened, with a simple WordPress site, mobile optimized, which again was quite a thing back in 2010, if you think about it now.
Yeah, for sure.
And I think we got our big break in December 2010. That was when we had a massive snowfall, and our world-famous Lincoln Christmas Market was cancelled for the first time in history. So we were the first ones to be able to get on location and report about it. And the news spread like wildfire, and we were able to start capturing people's attention. We were there to report for things as they happened, rather than the next day or the day afterwards.
I love it. Like, just don't sleep on student media. I mean, I remember being back at uni, the lecturers would say, look, get involved with the student newspaper, and so many people would roll their eyes, but it's been such a catalyst for you in your career by the sounds of things.
It has, and I think student media in a lot of places has been severely weakened, and there's not a lot of it going on right now. We have some of the national style publication where students can contribute and take part, but the actual student org newspapers or magazines or websites run by students at those universities are few and far between. And from my research and my observations, I've seen that they only remain at the classic and the major universities.
Right. Something must have kept you in the area with Lincoln. You've stayed here all this time. What was it?
The business and the Lincolnite developing into a first citywide, then countywide news organization, and the organic growth that we've had during those 14 years that Lincolnite has been running. We started at the beginning of the social media era. Facebook came out in the UK in 2008. I was still at uni, and you needed to have a university email account in order to be able to join it. And it was, if I recall correctly, 2009 or 2010 when it became publicly available for everybody. Similarly with Twitter, which began picking up around the same time. And we were fueled by the growth of social media. And we were also at the forefront of it because we were the first local publication to create a presence on it and start distributing our content through social media.
Yeah.
And that helped us to get well known locally and then become embedded in the local communities through what people still think now of the Lincolnite as a Facebook page, even though we've always had a website, an app. An app was also very important. We had it from possibly the second year. I was able to cobble something together from some of the options that were available on the web at the time. And things really developed from there.
Yeah, but then you must have needed to expand, recruit more people, become more sophisticated as a newsroom, invest in other tech and workflows along the way. How much of a challenge was that?
My passion has always been technology, besides media and journalism. Mm. While I was in uni, and even for the first couple of years of the Lincolnite, I was a freelancer for the IDG group, and I was writing daily technology blogs. That was an amazing time in tech. The iPhone came out in 2007 and changed the world. In 2010, we actually had the first decent iPhone, rather than the 3G and the 3GS. And smartphone and mobile consumption was one of the key drivers in also helping us grow.
Right.
And from then onwards, it was a case of always jumping or working with the new trend in order to be able to create media content that delighted, entertained, and informed local audiences as quick and as accurate as possible.
So Daniel launched the Lincolnite after graduating from university, keeping the DNA of the student paper he led, The Link, where he found success turning it into a digital-first news organisation with a focus on speed, local scoops and mobile consumption. The Lincolnite grew organically through the rise of social media, then through the iPhone boom fueling mobile consumption. Its popularity produced bespoke advertising deals with local businesses, leading to a better reader experience than what its corporate rivals could match. It briefly had two other titles focusing on police and councils and local business before consolidating them into the main title, The Lincolnite, as a continuous scrolling website. However, the media ecosystem started to change. Platforms like Facebook, that once fueled its success, started to kill important features, became less useful for referral traffic, and less effective for monetization. So Daniel saw an opportunity. Its biggest change came last year when the Lincolnite launched a community app, My Local, investing around £500,000 into the product. It boasted a social media style newsfeed, curating geolocated posts from emergency services, community groups, and other news organisations. The Lincolnite also launched a membership as part of this, paywalling around 10% of its content, and it had future plans to license the product out to other news publishers.
My Local was the vision for independent local publishers to be able to own their distribution, personalize their distribution, but also the engagement with their readers and also monetizing it in more than one way. We were running on a WordPress website, and WordPress has been the backbone of the internet for a decade, although the problem with WordPress is once things start getting a bit more complex and you want to start adding things, things start slowing down and things don't marry each other. So, for example, if we want to use one of these third-party commenting systems, but we also wanted to, say, introduce a metered or registration paywall, you would have had to have two different sign-up methods and IDs to do so. And then if you also wanted to personalize the advertising or the content order in which things appeared, you would then need possibly a third or a fourth ID login in order to be able to achieve all that. And there was nothing out of the box which did that. And that was one of the things which stemmed the idea and vision of MyLocal in order to be able to bring all this together into a single package that was for publishers, by publishers, and helping them thrive. At the same time, I also did a master's by research, and I interviewed independent local publishers up and down the UK. And what I was hearing from all of them was pretty clear. We are too busy reporting, and the technology is not our forte, but we also need an all-in-one solution that allows us to do a range of things that otherwise wouldn't be possible. Still, most of them run on WordPress or some other self-hosted platform. And that's why MyLocal was looking at being a one-stop shop solution for all these problems. If you, for example, worked with a programmatic ad network, you, as we know now, Google retains up to 36 to 40% of the value of an ad, and you still can't get the scale in a small city in order to generate enough revenue to support one reporter, let alone an entire team to do so. So what we created was a self-service system in which an advertiser could both create their advert and choose which areas of the county to distribute it based on our logged in users. Similarly, if they wanted to post a job or if they wanted to list an event, but advertising was only one part of the game. Naturally, paywalls and memberships were also a key to supporting independent local journalism. And the large service companies that produce paywall technology are frankly very expensive for a small or even a medium publisher. You would have to have tens of thousands of subscribers only to pay for your paywall system to do so. And something that combined all of this together, as well as with an app first, because without social media helping you distribute your content, you had to be able to ping people and notify them of what was happening and also give them a familiar way to consume this content in a clean way. It meant that we needed an all-in-one solution.
Yeah. I mean, Daniel, this all sounds, you know, great, and there's a lot of amazing ideas here. I guess the golden question that we need to get to is, why didn't this work in the end?
I think we're seeing a market failure for local journalism, a systemic one. Smaller communities and cities cannot sustain a news organization with an actual team of people and an office and a budget to roam around the county and produce quality journalism. And that's why you will continue to see a lot of one-man, two-man bands in local independent media and actually in corporate media as well. I think this problem will only intensify, because there are ways that could, say, sustain local journalism. But the reality is that those who can sustain real journalism are bothered by it and possibly better off without it. And by that, I mean local authorities, big business, and or government themselves. Of course, because they can control the message, Even marketing agency leaders themselves highlighted the con of the brand safe advertising complex. And that just moved money from real reporting to what would be entertainment or fluff reporting, leaving local media without much really to cope with. And in corporate local media, they are simply managing decline and they are overly relevant on print revenues. And in print, they still benefit from a monopoly. There are very, very few places where corporate local media competes with each other in print. There's this faux competition digitally, but in reality, when, you know, 20% or less in many cases of their revenue comes from digital, that's not really competition. And in print, they maintain solid monopolies propped by public notices and also what I call and the industry calls zombie newspapers, where you get rehashed network content, press releases, and all sorts of things that are not really relevant for a community. But it's a way to maintain some sort of presence and scattered stuff. And that's why digital revenues are still pennies to the pound, even 25 years into the internet era. Because even when there's reports of increased profits, they're still against the background of declining revenues and staff numbers. Most people are still not prepared to pay for real news or local news. There's a winner-takes-all, and obviously the NYT and the FT and a range of others are doing very well of that. But in local, it's very different, because here in the UK, people are already forced to pay for a public broadcaster, which does a great job nationally and internationally. And BBC is a treasure which we must maintain at really any cost.
Just a clarification. I mean, people don't have to pay the TV license. They can not use the iPlayer and they can declare. Just a small point on that. They're not forced to pay for a public broadcaster.
But I think even the BBC is struggling in terms of local reporting and figuring out a way how to serve local communities.
But Daniel, you said that people aren't prepared to pay for local news just a moment ago. Is that what you saw with the Lincolnite and My Local?
We had a core user base who were paying for the local news. And we had a major transformation of our editorial output the moment we introduced memberships. And it was only a select number of stories and only original stories that you couldn't find elsewhere. But what proved was that people wanted to read those stories, but they weren't prepared to read for it in a market where there were still other free players. So I guess if you're first to the market in your market with a subscription, you are possibly at a disadvantage.
Can you flip that for a moment? Because if you're working in a news desert and there isn't an alternative local news source, is that not then an opportunity to introduce some sort of paid content where there isn't competition?
There is an opportunity for memberships, but you have to start like that. If you flip it after 12 years of free content distribution supported by non-intrusive advertising, you will have major challenges in converting your readers, who basically grew up with you being a free publication and giving you all the best stuff for free, to then flip it on its head and say, actually, you're going to have to pay now for the best stuff.
So you think you left it too late then to introduce a paid product?
That could be one of the way you could interpret this. But the reality is that a lot of the publications already exist and they were free for a very long time. And changing that model in the eyes of users will always be tricky. Yeah. But if you're starting a new publication now or a new title, and if you're introducing memberships from day one, you capture a different type of audience, which is more likely to do so.
How much of your user base did you manage to convert to memberships then?
Less than 1%.
Less than 1%. So you really struggled with this then?
Well, the average industry numbers were putting it somewhere between 4 to 7%. So
what you could realistically expect to convert to a membership of your user base?
You could possibly push it maybe into the 5% territory, but you need more time. We only had maybe 14 months of working with a paywall, and we also didn't have all the content behind the paywall. It was only 10% or less than 10% of the content that we were putting for behind the paywall.
Question for you. There's I hear what you're saying completely. There's a lot of hype around local news organizations on newsletter platforms like Substack and Ghost, and having indeed apparently quite a lot of success there. Based on what you've said about, you know, we can't necessarily rely on platforms, we can't rely on these, you know, external players, would you urge caution to those sorts of news operations, or do you think maybe this is a slightly different dynamic?
Ghost is just basically a fancier WordPress with a email newsletter plugin attached to it. I've looked into it. It's great and it helps people set up things quickly, but it doesn't come with any advertising, so you are still bound to figuring out that one yourself, or and that typically means defaulting to one of the programmatic systems across the web. I think Substack has journalism at its core, and Hamish McKenzie being a journalist himself, you can tell that it's built for writing and journalism. The trick there is that possibly Substack, as amazing and quickly developing as it is, it's developing for the creator economy. And I think this is where we need to make a difference between the creator economy and between local media. Local media in reality involves teams in order to be consistent and to be in multiple places at the same time. Even in a small city, multiple things will happen at the same time and a single person cannot cover them all in a timely fashion. While in the creator economy, where people are sharing insightful, original things that they are experts in, platform like Substack are an amazing boon. And think places like Substack do offer the network effect, which you don't necessarily get with something like Ghost. Yes, you pay for it and they don't take a cut out of your subscriptions. However, you are still fully reliant on your own content distribution, marketing, and discovery, or responsible for it, like you would be with your own WordPress website, while places like Substack offer a bit more flexibility and help. And I also want to give a shout out here to Beehive as well, which is another American initiative for newsletters, which is also developing an alternative model to Substack, similar to Ghost, where you pay an upfront fee and you don't pay a commission for your subscriptions.
I really appreciate that perspective there, Daniel. I mean, it doesn't sound from your answer you're as wary of the newsletter platforms as opposed to the big tech giants of Facebook and Google.
We have to be realistic. For anything to grow, it needs to take investment and VC funding. And the likes of Substack, they've had over $100 million they raised from my research. Even Beehive, who is developing super quick, they raised $12 million. If you can name one UK-based media business that invested a fraction of that into any technology, then I would be very impressed.
Daniel describes the situation facing independent news organisations as a market failure, that there aren't enough audiences willing to pay for news to prop it up or scale it fully. Digital revenues are not sufficient either. Platforms can simply outcompete them on building and scaling tech, and he holds no hope in potential UK legislation that might get big tech to cough up money for news. Daniel also says there needs to be better mechanisms for investing in independent local news, as My Local was initially self-financed, and then a round of angel investment from local businesses made up the rest. Ultimately, the investment bought the 2 years to create the app and 14 months of operation, but in the end, the runway simply ran out before it had a chance to scale further, and there was not enough money to keep going on.
We were very fortunate to be able to put in a lot of our surpluses from the publishing business into it. Mm-hmm. And then I will also be eternally grateful to the investors that we had in My Local and trusting our vision. But ultimately, we ran out of time and what we call runway, mm-hmm. in terms of being able to scale the products in another market, which was going to be becoming the key part of us becoming sustainable. Yeah. When we built My Local, we knew that the investment required was not going to be covered by just operating in Lincolnshire. So that meant that we had to scale and grow quicker into other markets. But at the same time, the challenges of developing all the required features for other publishers to be able to use it and then to launch in those markets, combined with what we effectively had and possibly still are at the moment in terms of a recession. There was an official one back in February, and a lot of businesses are yet to recover, a lot of the smaller ones, meant that we basically hit a wall.
Yeah.
At a crucial time when we had to spread our wings further.
Yeah, I hear you on that. I mean, do you regret the investment?
I don't live by a mantra of regrets. Everything I've done, it was always with the best intentions and trying to do something lasting that had an impact and that also served people, because I'm coming from a journalistic background. And the learnings are that you need even more investment and more time when the technology players around you are spending and investing at a much higher rate. And possibly the reality is here, or the realization that I have here, is that the investment market here in the UK is very different from the stories that we hear from America. There are a range of key industries where you see investment, and it's usually something to do with either AI hype or biomed or fintech or a range of things. But as I said, there's very little innovation and investment in media. And that's why even the likes of Ghost and Substack and all the other platforms have not come from the UK or Europe.
Is what happened to the Lincolnite, was it preventable, is really my question. Do you think this was always going to happen, or is there a way you could have given yourself more runway?
Giving ourselves more runway meant being able to secure even more investment at a time when the market and the economy was very fickle, to put it in the best way.
I'm with you.
While I wouldn't like to call myself a victim, I could say that it was a case of the circumstances in which we operated and the state of the economy.
I want to ask this question really sensitively, Daniel, because I mean, you've been with this Lincolnite since your student days. This must be so close to your heart. And so the decision you ultimately made, you know, to call it a day must have been so difficult for you, you know, and to make this decision.
The financial implications of what we did forced me to take this decision. We didn't have an option in terms of what we needed to do.
Right. I'm going to get to what I feel is a really critical question, which is, if you had your time again with the Lincolnite, what would you do the same and what would you do differently?
The same. I would certainly maintain the vision and trying to inform people in a way that resonates with them and that I feel I would want to do, rather than say what an old handbook would tell you. What I would do differently is possibly try to grow slower, even though that sounds counterintuitive.
Right.
Because the landscape in which we operate can change significantly from 1 month to another, or from one algorithm update to another. You could say, okay, I'm not going to be reliant on social media. I'm going to distribute things through a newsletter. But you will inevitably be reliant on web searches and Google. And as we know, they are a monopoly both in the web and in mobile. And Google is the web. They control the distribution of all the open web content to a degree of 91%, if my figures are correct. And any changes they do will also highly impact it. And diversifying revenue is something that we have done. And I forgot to mention for the Link and I that we've also created events, awards, 30 under 30, networking, and a range of other things. But doing that on your own, or even with a small team, can be challenging.
Yeah.
So what the learning would be that you would have to possibly try to grow and scale slower, but that will also have implications on revenue and sustainability, especially for the person who is starting it or leading it.
How do you grow slower? Like, how do you intentionally not grow too fast?
For example, hiring people only after the revenue covers the upcoming salaries or dues or costs, rather than before, and then pushing it to scale afterwards. And for independent local media, this will always be a challenge and a major jump. Do I quit my full-time or part-time job to follow up on this gig is step number one. And then step number two, which can also take a very long time, is at what point do I have my first full-time hire? And that totally changes the game afterwards.
So I guess my parting question to you is, what's your best advice for an independent news operation listening to this episode? You know, with all the benefit of your hindsight and everything you've learned, what's your parting message to them right now in terms of growing a sustainable business, trying to make a difference where they are? You know, what would you say to them?
Try and find somebody who believes in your vision and can support your initiative for medium term at least. Anything you would start, whether it's advertising based or subscription based, will take a while to build up, especially if you're starting from a zero audience point of view. Just because you see that others have said that they have thousands of paid subscribers, look at when they started. It will take 2-3 years until you can get yourself in a good position.
It's a great message, Daniel. I wonder what's next for you.
I'll definitely give you a heads up first, Jacob.
Keeping that one close to your chest, that's fair enough. Listen, an enormous pleasure to speak to you today. Thank you so much for coming on our show. Much appreciated.
Thank you, Jacob.
The takeaway for today is not to be discouraged from innovating. The UK local news sector desperately needs bright ideas and new business models, but the story of the Lincolnite is a sobering reminder that even the best innovations need proper backing and support so they don't fizzle out. That can happen when you run too fast, so Daniel's parting advice is to grow slow, don't make any rash decisions, and try not to be too reliant on any single platform or revenue stream. But what did you learn from today? Let's continue the conversation. I'm on LinkedIn, Twitter/X@JPGJournalism, or email me on jacob@journalism.co.uk. You can check out all of our episodes on all your usual podcast platforms like Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Just search and subscribe to the journalism.co.uk podcast. But that's all we have time for this week. I've been your host, Jacob Granger. Thanks so much for listening. Until next time.